It'll be 2 weeks in a row we're watching a trailer live on the pod.
But tonight we're watching the most important one.
That is true.
The most important one.
Though it's only a minute and a half.
So you're only a minute and a half.
Whoa. A little hot-tempered today.
I've already seen the Black Series announcement like drop for...
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all, they came out today, so leave me alone.
Well, it's... Well, actually, I forgot how I start the podcast already. Wow.
Star Wars. Transformers. Godzilla. Animation. Whatever else. Rebels. Robots. And etc.
It's a classic episode already. You're making fun of me. You're talking about Black Series figures. I'm just forgetting what I'm supposed to say. And what I'm supposed to say is, it's Starformers Night! Welcome to Rebels and Robots and Etc. Episode 73. I'm Cameron.
I'm Rachel.
And this is our bi-weekly chat about Star Wars and...
Transformers.
You're not supposed to see that yet. That's for later. She's pointing at my screen. Wars, Transformers, and whatever else we both want to talk about. Today, we are chatting about whatever we want to talk about. It is our first ever, and I feel like we'll probably return to this in the future, tangent episode. We're just going to talk about whatever we want. We each have come prepared with a thing, or if me, it's lots of little things.
If me gets...
Mine has a general theme to it. And
he says with the assumption that mine doesn't.
We're pretty much doing... Normally, I try to keep the tangents to a minimum as best I can, cut to hours and hours of me not doing a good job of that over the last 2 years. Today, that we're just going to do it. We're just going to tangent on off to whatever we want to chat about. I look forward to hearing what Rachel has. I have no idea what she's going to talk about, and I know she's fully unprepared for what I'm going to talk about. I'm really excited. This is the most research I've ever done for an episode, which is not very much. But before today's topic, as always, it's news, woos, and boos. The segment of the show where Rachel has a bit of news and I rate it on a woo or a boo, showing my taste or distaste for the news that she just brought as a piece of news. And I also often have news or recent thoughts, and Rachel's... welcome to rate mine as well. What do you got, Rachel?
I'm going to start. We're going to go like least important to most important.
Okay, cool.
This year, Revenge of the Sith is 20 years old. How do you feel?
Whoa. I was in third grade when that movie came out. Ooh. Dang, dude.
How do you feel?
20 years. That's wild.
Yeah.
When that movie came out, 2005, 85, it was just over 20 years since Return of the Jedi had come out when Revenge of the Sith came out.
Man. 20? Yeah, I would have been 20. I forgot how to do math for a second. Anyways, it's going to come back to theaters on April 25th. So if you want to go see Order 66 again on the big screen, you can go see it. So that's my first piece of news. The second one is the only piece of news I have.
Okay. I rate that first one a timid woo. A very light woo, just shy of a boo.
Is it because of it ages you?
Sure, why not? What's your next one?
The big one. Do you have anything else to talk about?
I've got three.
Okay, you should probably speak yours.
This is a Facebook link, but I can't remember. Oh, I do remember what this was. So this is a video that brings up a really cool point. We actually skipped talking about this in our Skeleton Crew episode when they are escaping the spa. They fight this big crab thing.
Oh, yes.
And it's practical.
No.
This is a
way.
Footage of a time lapse of the stop motion. And I'm sure there's CGI augmentation, but isn't that wild?
That's amazing.
Retroactively, this is one of the coolest things in the show.
That is amazing.
So that's kind of the issue with modern visual effects, is it's really hard to catch when things are done practically, and I really appreciate them putting the work. I'm sure there was things about it that were probably augmented with CGI. But, and obviously it would have been composited using computers with the footage of the people, but nonetheless, the big crab thing.
I think they should have hired a real life crab for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Disney has hired one before for Moana. They could have just brought him back. Anyways.
They did. They brought him back for the show that became a movie.
Is he in the show?
So Moana 2 is supposed to be a 6-episode. I haven't watched it. I've just heard about it. It was supposed to be like a 6-episode like mini show.
Yeah.
They made it into a movie, so you can.
But does it have the crab?
Yeah,
in it?
I'm pretty sure. At least
a bit. I've not seen it.
I saw a clip. I haven't seen it either. But
that movie made $1 billion, I think. Moana 2.
Yeah.
Tangent. Okay, this is a tangent episode, so I'm gonna. Because it's animation.
But did it make $1 more billion?
No, but it did make Moana $1 billion. It did. It made exact, like, just
I think
over.
You mean Moan $1 billion.
There you go. Anyways, cool retrospective back to Skeleton Crew. We talked about the practical effects. Didn't even realize the big monster was one.
Big.
Do you want me to do... I have two small things if, like... Did you want me to do what I had before you do your news?
Yes.
Our
news.
Oh, this is just this is one of my favorite things to point out, is jokes that you made that I missed while recording. So a joke that...
Jokes that are funny.
...was made that was really obvious I did catch was... I don't remember even what it was, but you said that we were sponsored by a particular brand and I censored it. But then you did it again later. Made a comment about that I had gotten some technical support from a employee of Vimeo who was on Reddit, and you said, "Shout out Reddit! This episode sponsored by Reddit." I didn't even catch that at the time.
Sponsored by Reddit.
So funny.
You get to guess which subreddit. We won't tell you.
But then that also reminds me of something I didn't write down, but a very accidentally like funny moment.
I'm never accidentally funny.
Well, this was in the editing, so I guess this is technically credited to Athena.
Oh, Athena.
There was the episode moment last episode where we were talking about people I had talked about in regular life about the podcast, and I censored out their name. Or I mean, Athena censored out their names with the usual sound effect, mostly Star Wars sound effects. But I said all their names in like quick succession, or like we were saying them back and forth. So we're just having this conversation that is mostly Star Wars sound effects. And it was, I didn't intend for that to be the joke, but it was good. Just a quick thought I have written down.
So the other thing, when we censor things, we actually make those noises ourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
Gronk.
Yeah.
Those are
Gronk.
Skryonk.
Oh, okay.
What kind of Godzilla fan are you?
I thought you were talking about football.
Oh, I said Skryonk.
No, you said Skronk.
Okay, whatever. Totally unrelated Star Wars thought. It popped into my head. I was thinking about the Mando Grogu movie.
Hmm.
Full title, The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Yeah.
And it made me realize that movie's kind of doomed in the sense of either... It just feels like a long episode of The Mandalorian, mm-hmm. in which case it's like, what is the point? Why is this in theater? People are going to feel kind of gypped. It's going to feel weird and not worth it. Or it's going to be good. It's going to feel like a movie. It's going to feel cinematic. It's going to be like worth the movie. But then it's going to retroactively, I feel like, make the show look bad.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be like, why did we make this a show to begin with? Like, mm-hmm. why are you watering down?
Maybe season 3.
Yeah, it just like it feels like if you watch kind of like Andor, when you watch Andor, it's like, oh, this is
it's
like
peak.
If they made a movie, Rogue One. I mean, it feels consistent with Rogue One. Like, it does not, when you watch Andor and you watch Rogue One, it does not feel like, oh, one is lower quality than the other, or one is like over outclassing the other. And there certainly are episodes of The Mandalorian that feel cinematic and feel like they are made with a lot of craft. But I feel like the majority of The Mandalorian style would not work well in comparison to the quality. Like, the visual effects and the lighting and the costumes are all very high quality, mm-hmm. in The Mandalorian. But I do feel like sometimes there's like a, you know, it's a show. And shows are different. I'm not trying to bash. It's kind of a hard point to make. I think my point is...
This just in. Cameron hates The Mandalorian and wants to put Grogu through a meat grinder.
That is not true. I guess my point I'm trying to hit is it's going to be a very thin line to walk between, mm-hmm. Mandalorian and Grogu feeling like a film and being good, but also not outclassing and diminishing its own show, mm-hmm. that it's spinning off from. So I'll be curious to see if they're able to actually like play both sides and make something that's worthwhile.
What if they've already filmed season 4 in its entirety and the movie is actually just all of those episodes mashed together.
Well, you know what? It's fun. That's what Moana 2 was.
Exactly.
I didn't even make that
imagine you go in to watch head, it but... and you hit the moment where you go, so this is where the Disney Plus ad is supposed to play, and this is where the end credits are supposed to come in.
Because that is what's so concerning about Moana 2 doing so well, is it shows, maybe we don't actually need to try. And I know that they went in and pumped things up. It wasn't like they did not literally just take what was going to be on Disney Plus and put it in theaters. They did go back and like redo the animation, so it's not flat out just TV quality, but people talk about at least the writing quality.
The writing, you can tell where it's supposed to end.
And I can't imagine the animation is as slick as like an Inside Out 2 or a Wild Robot.
Even the first one.
The first one is a gorgeous movie. I have a lot of criticisms of that film narratively, but animation-wise, it is one of the most beautifully CGI-rendered film ever.
It does lose a point for replacing Tamara Morrison's singing voice, though. Lin-Manuel Miranda, you are not welcome on this podcast until you give me the Tamara cut.
Man, call back to the... We did once reference his album on the podcast, Tamara Morrison. At least once.
It's on my road trip playlist.
Is it really? That's great.
Yeah, straight up.
And he sings Give Me the Beat, Boys, and which is a Godzilla joke as well. See, now the dream is for there to be a Godzilla movie that takes place entirely in New Zealand, and it ends with Tamara Morrison's rendition of Give Me the Beat, Boys, as Godzilla walks into the ocean.
I don't know if New Zealand's going to survive something like that.
It's got to be approximately the same size as Japan. It's probably bigger than Japan. I think it is. Tangent time. Okay. Square mileage of Japan. This is like our first like true episode of 2025, I mean, and this is what we're talking about. Okay, it is. Japan is 146,000 miles. New Zealand.
Oh,
it's smaller. It is 103. So it is, they are...
I know what I'm talking about.
They are comparable in size, but yes, Japan is bigger than New Zealand. So, anyways.
Give me the beat, boys.
The point is, I don't remember the point we were making. We're talking about, we got way off.
You were talking about there should be a New Zealand-centered Godzilla film.
Yeah, but before that.
And then we were talking about Tamara Morrison. And then we were talking about Moana and the fact that it was a show turned into a movie and our concerns that. What if Mandalorian and Grogu is the same thing? There we go.
You wrapped it up. We're done. Okay, that's all of my news. What do you got?
So the most important thing to happen so far this year, out of everything that you've probably seen on the news, is that they just released the Andor Season 2 trailer.
Yes, we have it here right in front of us.
We're going to watch it.
Long anticipated. Oh, God.
Move your mouse.
Some electric guitar.
We're in a war. You want to fight?
Wheat fields. Oh, Andor driving a TIE fighter.
Ruining the vibe.
What was it? Let it play. This is a interesting choice. So this is a. I don't know what this song is, but it's not. You can hear that there's someone singing, and it just had the text. The first season of Andor was hailed by critics everywhere.
We just got Saw Gerrera'd.
We did get Saw Gerrera'd. Emotional, thrilling, and exciting. The rap. Confident and sophisticated. This is like a early 2000s trailer. Whoa. So, right at the song, the music cut out and Andor lit a bomb. Very terrorist activity. And then there's Krennic. A prestige drama with searing action and Emmy-worthy performances. That's an interesting ship. Do you know what that ship is? I've never seen that before. Were they about to kiss or fight? So this, who is that grabbed him? Do we know her?
Well, you're not exactly pausing it, and you have your brightness all the way down.
So a woman grabs Andor.
My other question, was that the Rebellion base?
I mean, it's TIE fighters with a very cool green and white paint job. You mean like the Yavin base?
No, it's not Yavin. Is that the blonde girl from the first one, Belle?
Maybe.
So bad at pausing.
Okay, so who are these guys?
That's
no, These guys.
Cameron, who's these guys? Pauses not on the correct scene.
So it's a bunch of guys with seemingly stormtrooper armor, but none of them have helmets on. Which is just stands out to me. And the guy's bald, so I thought first thing it might be old clone troopers, but definitely not.
Cameron, when he sees a bald man, Tamura.
So we're seeing some sort of...
It's probably her daughter's wedding.
Oh, yeah. So it's... So there's a dance number occurring with Mon Mothma, seemingly a cultural experience, probably her daughter's wedding, yeah. There's K2SO.
Bix.
Cyril.
Go back. No, wait, never mind.
Whatever this action sequence with Andor hijacking the TIE fighter, this is gonna kill. It looks so sick. Remember this moment.
Cyril's mom!
Here, and you're ready to fight!
Oh, so they brought back a Star Wars story. This is Andor, a Star Wars story, which was the original sub... It was originally gonna be like... Star Wars story, Rogue One, Han Solo, a Star Wars story, which I think that is the official title of Star Wars. Well,
isn't... I think Skeleton Crew is also a Star Wars story.
Interesting.
Wow, Riz.
Yeah, the last shot is Andor with his hair. He looks like a Victorian-era composer. There was a shot I was curious about.
So that was Brasso from the first season.
Yeah.
Deidre, all right.
So we have a lot of shots of Krennic, which is pretty great. The TIE fighter, I thought it was doing like a consistent laser. It's just like rapid fire. Yeah, that TIE fighter scene's gonna be killer. Look, that dance scene looks fun. It's like a big camera robot. It's a big lens with like five flashes around it, taking pictures of Mon Mothma as she
and her husband
as her she comes to an event.
And those are the parents of the guy.
There's only one shot of K2SO, which is really interesting.
Imagine it's not K2SO. It's just another...
Well, yeah, it's possible that it's not. I forgot about Cyril's weird tie that comes out of the collar of his shirt rather than being like tied around the collar. It looks great. I mean, it looks like Andor. Like, it just looks like more great Andor stuff. Him getting shot at and jumping over bars, bombs, people fighting, people yelling. Saw Gerrera being a madman.
Take a shot every time you get Saw Gerrera'd.
It looks visually exciting. What a bizarre trailer, like the structure of it.
It feels very like punk rock, sticking it to the man kind of early 2000s trailer.
I would like to know what that song is. The comments are not revealing.
Cameron, so scrolling too fast before I can read them.
Any big thoughts from that trailer?
Big excited.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see that we've got Stellan Skarsgård, but I'm glad to see that we've basically got a return of the major key players.
Yes.
It was hard to tell, especially from the angle and lighting, but I wonder if that woman who grabbed him, like she was about to fight him, I wonder if that's Vel, Mon Mothma's cousin from the first season.
Okay, interesting. So the song is "The Revolution Starts Now," fitting title, by the artist Steve Earle. It is a 2004 song, and I've never heard of Steve Earle before. He kind of looks like a guy who would live on what is the planet that most of Andor takes place on, like where the revolution is. The opening and closing of Andor season one.
Ferrix,
yeah. He looks like a guy who... He looks like someone who'd be... He'd be the...
Yeah, you do look like anvil. Someone who lives on Ferrix.
He looks like he'd be like the anvil guy.
at least.
So, yeah, it's just bizarre to have a Star Wars trailer that's not Star Wars music. It's like contemporary-ish. You know, do you know what? This song's also 20 years old. Gosh.
How old do you feel?
Old. But it's a fun vibe for a trailer. I liked it a lot. I mean, there's not a lot like that's actually really revealed.
I kind of like that, though.
No, absolutely. No, I mean, that is, we didn't need anything to get excited. We didn't need anything to convince us to watch.
You don't need to convince me to watch
season 2. I had a thought in comparison to something else, and I'm trying to think of what it was. I mean, it visually looks phenomenal. Like, there's nothing there that concerns me whatsoever. Yeah, I had a thought, and it's gone. But we'll be talking about it 2 months. 2 months away. And that reminds me, so we have not figured out what we're doing until Andor season 2 comes out, but last week we did work out our calendar once, so we have 2 more episodes after this, and then we will have the Andor season premiere.
Yay.
We don't know how long the show will go for exactly as far as like release schedule, but it will almost certainly, it will definitely go into May, maybe even into June. So we will start Andor season 2 on April 23rd and then cover it as long as it's coming out. And then starting May 14th, we will start our coverage of Jurassic Park, leading up to Jurassic Park Born Again. Jurassic World. I'm sorry. I made a mistake. Jurassic World Born Again. And we've decided to double up on the sequels. So May 28th, we'll do Jurassic Park 2 and 3, aka Lost World. And Jurassic Park 3 is the title. And then Jurassic World on June 11th, and then the 2 sequels to Jurassic World on June 25th, and then July 9th will be Jurassic World 4 : Jurassic Park 7 : Here They Come Again. And so, yeah, but we have no idea what we're doing the next 2 weeks, our next 2 episodes between now and April 23rd. So we'll
there's a realm of possibilities.
Absolutely. Maybe some of the stuff we'll talk about today will be worth doing a full episode on. I don't know. So today, 2 tangents. Rachel, do you want to go first?
Sure.
Great.
So Cameron said we were going to go on tangents, and one thing that could, that was them, that was, one thing that could be is lesser known nor.
That was great.
You should go first. That was so good. Is lesser known lore. And one thing about, the fun thing about Transformers is that Cameron doesn't know much lore outside of the
only
movies.
What you've told me, really.
The movies and what I've force-fed him on this podcast. So today we're going to discuss Cybertronian law, specifically within focused on the IDW 2005 continuity.
Okay.
I hope you guys are ready for this. It will not make sense.
For some context, IDW 2005, is that a comic series?
It's
okay, I just want to clarify which continuity.
It's kind of the longest running one. That's going to be 20 years
like
old this year.
Like longest running as far as from start to end.
Yeah, pretty much.
Interesting. Like, is it still going?
It's G1 centered. I think it's officially done because now the Skybound is going. Skybound is insane.
Is that like the current comic drama? Yeah. Like they like totally restarted?
Yeah, it's a totally different. It's totally different.
Yeah. I've seen some stuff.
I almost talked about that one because that one is actually brutally insane.
Mm.
But I thought I would stick to something a little bit more our speed, law. Caleb, you're welcome. So the thing about this, I'm just going to touch on a couple different laws. And here's the other thing. None of them have ever actually been written down. They've only been referenced through various articles. So sometimes they might have a bunch of articles and you just don't know what the first 6 are. So.
Okay.
You're welcome. So the first thing we're going to talk about is the Ty-Rest Accord.
Ty-Rest Accord.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do it.
So I thought you were just now clicking record.
And I was like, are you kidding me? Levels.
Mute me for 20 minutes. So the Ty-Rest Accord is an agreement between the Autobots and the Decepticons. It originally governed the control of Transformer technology, forbidding it from passing into the hands of alien species, but eventually it evolved into full-blown military law. It was created by a guy named Ty-Rest, who is also like multiple people. He's not exactly sure who it is because he was multiple people and then just chose.
What do you mean
name.
He was
in different like
people.
Continuities? It's like it's like a reoccurring name.
I
but
see.
He became a chief justice, which means he gets to make all of the laws, and he gets to wear a little crown. It's cute. So, it was brokered early in the war because peace talks between Optimus Prime and Megatron didn't work. So the Accord bans the export of Cybertronian technology to other races, other aliens, and also, and so here's just a couple of things of the articles. I will not elaborate because there is no elaboration outside of references. So yes, Article 3 is prevention of provision of material Cybertronian technology to alien species and Cybertronians providing services to organic races. That's racism.
So does that mean that Transformers helping humans is breaking this agreement?
Probably.
Or like, was that agreement broken long before?
It was like at the beginning of the war.
Yeah.
And when things didn't work. So, you know, they all left Cybertron. Can't have Cybertronian laws if you're not on Cybertron. That's how that works, right?
So can I ask a question about the trade element?
Sure.
That you may or may not know. Yes. Did this like affect both? Okay. I guess my main question is, why would the villains known as the Decepticons agree to sign anything? What did they benefit from signing this?
Probably what would happen is if you're trading with other planets and other species, you could get goods and services like supplies, because Energon's found on other planets.
Interesting.
Other weaponry, things like that.
So they wanted to stop the Autobots from
the Tyrus trading. Basically, they were like, you can't trade. Well, you can't trade. Well, I guess none of us is going to trade.
So both sides saw it mutually agreeable to just keep the war on Cybertron effectively.
Yes. That didn't happen. Mentioned in the Autobot code also, so I'll get to that in a bit. The Tyrus Accord has a paragraph in anticipation of thought warfare.
Thought.
That is T-H-O-U-G-H-T.
That's less interesting.
It's a type of warfare that never happened, but it was a preventative, you can't have thought warfare, which I think is similar to how Britain is cracking down on thoughts. Do you know what I'm referencing? I think law talk in Britain. Caleb, correct me if I'm wrong in our group chat. Like penalizing and holding people accountable for like thought crimes. Camera's Googling.
Thought crime is now a reality in the UK from last October. Praying silently in front of an abortion facility can now put you at legal risk in the United Kingdom, according to this. Okay. Man. Well, great. Phenomenal.
An example of an Autobot violating the code of not providing things to another race. Bumblebee decided to use a torch to help some Extaxians, I don't know what those are, cope with the freezing cold temperatures of their planet. Ultramagnus, who's in charge of all this, brought up the Tyrus Accord to point that Bumblebee was not leaving the torch behind. That's how strict it was. They can't even leave supplies on other planets.
Oh, wow.
Because you could be breaking the law, the rules. Great. I'm already losing Cameron. I can see the glassiness in his eyes.
Well, it's around interesting, but I am curious to see where you're going with this, if there is a big point.
One Autobot had an encyclopedic knowledge of the Tyrus Accord. I don't have this memorized. I'm not that smart. To the point he could recite the exact passages of a crime to its perpetrator. Apparently, this drove one criminal to commit suicide after 2.5 days of listening to Prowl's application of the Accord to his crimes.
Oh my God. So, okay. So what you're reading, is this like off of like the Transformers wiki?
It's off the TF wiki, yeah.
So this is describing.
None of the laws are actually written down. Like there is nothing that like actually goes, this is what the Constitution is.
The summary that you're reading is like people on the TF wiki themselves summarizing things that happened in the comics. That is a scene. What you just described is a scene out of the comic.
Someone committed suicide. Wow.
Or something referenced in the comic. It is canon.
Yes, it is canon. And some parts of the Accord can be seen as ambiguous on matters of unnecessary cruelty, which means people can get that they can get away with that. At some point after his disappearance, I was going to say it's hysterical. This is actually not funny. This is an abuse of political power. Tyrus constructed legislators to help enforce the Accord. If the law was broken in their presence, the legislators would respond with overwhelming and often lethal force against the responsible party. Tyrus also possessed, it's called a repository that contained the text, like it was like a little, think of it like an iPad baby. With it, he could edit the Accord whenever he wanted, adding stuff and removing stuff. For example, one thing he added was preemptive execution, which gave him the power to kill anyone who intended to take action against him.
Um, Can't possibly seeing anything ever go wrong with that.
No, not at all. Athena laughed. Did you hear that? She did. The other, some final information was, this is from a very specific comment. There's another group on Earth in the IDW called Earth Defense Command, which is humans. When Optimus Prime discovered that the Earth Defense Command was reverse engineering Cybertronian technology to produce anti-transformer weapons, he told the President of the United States that such weaponry is a violation of the Ty-Rest Accord and could lead to consequences if Earth does not join the Council of Worlds, which is a council of aliens and transformers. Which is wild. Optimus Prime talked to the President of the United States.
But also lecturing him on laws that they are not, like, subject to.
That's essentially the President going, you violated the Geneva Convention. Be like, what's that? So anyways, that's the Ty-Rest Accord. I have other laws if you're curious.
I guess, you know what? I'll do a few of mine.
Okay.
And then we'll come back to yours.
We'll see how long we want to talk for.
Both of ours kind of nicely, like, have installments that we can bounce back and forth.
Cameron's crying internally right now.
No, I think that is fascinating to me that, well, I mean, it goes back to, we talked about this early on when we watched an early episode of Transformers G1 that looked at the beginning of the war. That dang thing was going on for thousands of years. So it does speak to the longevity of that war that there were actual treaties being signed and then broken and then signed again and then broken again.
I think they ultimately ended up ending the war. That's in a different continuity. I'm stupid. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Never mind.
I just kind of had some fun with Wikipedia, the Star Wars wiki, and ended up finding there were two things that I enjoyed. The main thing that I enjoyed is the names of some of the classic Star Wars books from mostly the 90s, but also some character names. So here's the first book name that jumped out to me. It's called Red Harvest, which is actually a prequel to Death Troopers, the famous zombie stormtrooper book. Red Harvest is a really stupid name for a Star Wars book because it's a very obvious reference to Blue Harvest. Blue Harvest being the famous working title for Episode 6. So the fact that someone...
I found out something new.
You've never heard that before?
I've never heard that.
It was just to, like, keep people from getting on the set. Most movie sets do this. They
What's
get a fake name.
George, show us the Star Wars. It's called Blue Harvest. That sounds boring.
And so to actually name an actual book Red Harvest is just so dumb to me.
It's like poetry.
But the stupidity does not stop there. Within this zombie-centric storyline...
If I had a nickel for each zombie Star Wars book.
There is a Sith Lord named Darth Scabrous, using scab as the root name for a Sith in a zombie thing is just ridiculous to me. But also, a character named Rojo Trace.
Isn't that red in Spanish?
Yes. And not if only the character's name was the dumbest thing about him, the character description on Wikipedia, that he, Rojo Trace, is based on Liam Neeson's character from the movie Taken. And even utters a line almost identical to that character near the beginning of his story arc. It doesn't specify which line it is. I'd imagine it's probably the classic, I have a very specific set of skills line. But yeah, so there's that. The other two...
I will find you and I will kill you.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's the same line.
Yeah. I've never seen
the Taken films.
It's one montage. Or not montage, but...
Monologue.
Monologue, thank you. The other two character names that... Well, I have one that comes later. But two come later, but two that are linked together. You have Triclops, is Palpatine's son/mutant slave. Here's, you've already seen the picture of him, but here's what he looks like. His eyebrows come out real far. He's got weird gray hair.
He's got some weird bangs going on.
Yeah. I don't know if it is just part of the narrative that they go back and forth on whether this guy is actually Palpatine's son or not, but the
Palpatine's going freaky.
The he was mentioned in multiple Wikipedia articles that I read, and they kept going back and forth on whether he was actually his son or not. I don't know if that's a narrative result showing up in the articles based on like where in the timeline they're describing. I don't know if it's like it was disputed in the story itself and then it was ultimately concluded, but it kind of feels like the writers disagreeing with each other about whether he's actually Palpatine's son or not.
Legends books being inconsistent. Uh-huh, yeah. Who would have guessed?
Well, not the writers of the books, writers of the articles on Wikipedia is what it felt like to me.
The Wookiee admins are beefing.
But Triclops actually had his own son. And his son, described as a Jedi prince, because his mother was a Jedi princess, whatever that means.
That's not how that works. That's exceptionally 80s fiction.
Yeah. And Star Wars fans are mad that none of this is canon. sure. His name is just Ken. That's it. It's just Ken. And I especially love that whenever an article would like group him in a list of names, Doro, Luke, Han, and Ken finally encounter Triclops, the true son of Emperor Palpatine.
Oh my gosh.
In order to help Ken become accustomed to the world outside of the lost city of the Jedi, Luke Skywalker brings him to Tatooine to experience Droid Fest.
Ugh.
The sentence would be ridiculous alone, but just adding a character just named Ken in there is so good.
Was it, when we watched Star Wars Visions, we were like, imagine being named Ethan.
Uh-huh, yeah. Or Caleb was our famous one. Okay, I'll come back to... I have a lot more just titles of books I found very funny, but this here's some more about Cybertronian law.
Cameron says through clenched teeth. Caleb, I hope you're enjoying this. We should just had you on for this episode. So we're going to talk about the Code of Interplanetary Conflict. So it's kind of like rules of war. The rules are set down by the code are not limited to Cybertronians, but apply to other spacefaring races as well. Probably not humans. I don't think we're spacefaring just yet.
No, definitely not in the 80s.
We got to our moon, and that's about it. That's as far as we got. So one of the big things it's called the Non-Interaction Accord. And it's still that same technology cannot be shared with other races.
Mm-hmm.
They will not be sharing their M1 chips. They will not.
Okay, cool.
Me when I make a joke. That's basically just the main thing. That's kind of the main thing. Stop giving our stuff out, basically. No handouts.
Stop selling my...
Stop selling. okay, so because that one was so short, we're going to talk about the Autobot code. So the Autobot code comprises a set of principles and rules that govern Autobot behavior. Also not really ever written down, because I guess they just don't write things down.
Autobots and Decepticons confirmed to be illiterate. Well, that just kind of means all these laws be like they're DW from Arthur. That's not going to stop me. I can't read.
Its reach is not universal, however, as some Autobots have completely abandoned its tenets when they felt the situation demanded it. It allegedly advocates a policy of nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
It's the alleged.
Did you say they abandoned it when they seem
some have when some have. When okay. The situation demanded it. So I'm guessing that's like
all the time?
All the time?
No, like all, every moment of being an Autobot?
So.
Just like, there's just not, from everything that I've seen that is Transformers, there's not a lot going on if there's not violence.
Exactly. So in the 2005 IDW Continuity Article 7 states that Autobots are obliged to grant safe haven to surrendered combatants. Another article, which is Section 19, I don't know what's between 7 and 19, covered the threat of, again, the threat of thought warfare, but became obsolete when the threat never appeared. And then, that was my stomach. It's 10,000 pages, apparently.
I thought you said it wasn't written down.
I was incorrect.
Is the code written down? These laws were not written down.
Yeah, the code's written down. It's 10,000 pages. This one is wild to me. Listen to this. Subsection 11, 3, Appendix D, entertainment, made it an offense to feature on the cover of a publication a character who does not appear within, and additionally stipulated that anyone purchasing such material would be complicit in said act of law breaking.
Hold on. So they have a printing press on Cybertron?
I guess.
In a world that is entirely mechanical. They are,
maybe it's just
they
like
don't have
maybe
trees.
It's just like visible. It's like tech. You know how Kindles work? It's like a Kindle. Yeah, that's probably how it works. It's like,
interesting.
So out of the 10,000 pages, that's all I got for you, the Autobot code. I have a very short one and then you can go.
Okay, cool.
Non-conventional Weapons Act. It was an act developed and upheld by the Autobots Ethics Committee, which sounds like an HR department. And basically what it is that you can't have non-conventional weapons. So they frequently had to confiscate weapons developed by Brainstorm and Iron Fist under this act.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is just, it's just wild. one thing that was banned is called cerebro-sensitive bullets. And they contain an onboard computer in the bullet, which locks onto the target's neural processor when the bullet is fired. And anyone using the ammo is guaranteed a headshot every single time. So the Autobot Ethics Committee banned that one.
What I am more interested in now is what authority does the Autobot Ethics Community have?
Do you want to know?
Because the question is if... So this is the problem with warfare. If the Autobots don't use it, but the Decepticons do, you're screwed.
It's morals, Cameron. Do you want to know the authority?
Yes, I do. I really do.
It's just any new weapon created by Autobot engineers must pass Protocol 3 of the Non-Conventional Weapons Act before it's allowed to be used in, quote, civilized, end quote, warfare. It's the job of the Ethics Committee to decide whether weapons pass the protocol.
I guess my biggest question is, I know so little, I would be curious in this continuity, what is the relationship of the Autobots to the Decepticons during the war? Like, are the Autobots the reigning part and the Decepticons are doing like a guerrilla style civil war against the Autobots? Because that would make sense. And if you're the ones manufacturing most of the arms, then yeah, and the Decepticons are stealing your arms from you, or they're getting them sold illegally to them, then yeah, would really want to clamp down on what is being...
It's like a civil war, I'm fairly certain. This is specific, yeah, but like IDW.
Who is in power, primarily?
If I remember correctly, it both started with Optimus Prime, and Megatron agreeing to dismantle the caste system, but disagreeing on how to do it, and that's where the split happened.
So, but for example, whatever, if the Transformers 1 series did a war, the Autobots are the one who maintained control of society.
They're it's kind of like change through peaceful matters, and then the Decepticons are like, burn it all down.
But like, do Decepticons have industry? Like, are they producing their own arms?
Yeah.
So if they can just produce whatever they want, and they have the capacity to build these bullets that can just instantly headshot people, it's kind of a problem. It's kind of a problem.
It is. You know what?
I'd just be curious, like, what benefits come out as a result of this ethics community?
Moral superiority.
Yeah.
More information. Brainstorm, who's not about, seemed to take special pride in scandalizing the committee. Sounds weird. With proposed weapons so unbelievable and so devastating that nothing short of the imminent destruction of Cybertron and the universe en masse would justify their use. Brainstorm coined the term the Unmentionables for his banned inventions and always went back to work on the next one after the last one was shot down.
Which character was that?
It was Brainstorm.
Brainstorm.
The committee sat in consideration of the cerebro-sensitive bullets that use the onboard computers, and deemed them in violation. One member openly expressed his horror at such a weapon and its disapproval of the creator.
It sounds like potentially this thing existed in canon as like a work of satire,
mm-hmm.
kind of like they were satirizing such things in real life and kind of how they don't really accomplish much and they're kind of just, like you said, moral superiority. They're just committees for the sake of bureaucracy.
We can't be bad guys trying to get rid of the bad guys. We have to uphold the morals.
Okay, so I have here just a list of funny book titles just because a lot of them are very silly. Mission from Mount Yoda. They, a little bit more information. It is the only mountain on Dagobah. They just went back and renamed it Mount Yoda.
After Yoda. The inhabitants of the mountain. Who's,
well, there's no, there are that? No inhabitants not on, sure. On Dagobah. But what's interesting to me is that the New Republic felt a need to go back and fortify this mountain. Like, they built a base on this mountain on Dagobah, which is a worthless planet to begin with. Dark Nest 1, The Joiner King. That's a book title in the Star Wars universe.
I don't like that.
Hard Merchandise. Here's a full trilogy of books that are all funny in their name. Lando Calrissian in The Flame Wind of Ocean. Lando Calrissian in The Mind Harp of Sharu. Lando Calrissian in the Star Cave of Thon Boca.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
That just like is the most like cliche like star sci-fi fantasy just mumbo jumbo. Curse of the Black Hole Pirates. This one, okay. This is the last one, and then I have a little more. I have character names, and then there I have my true tangent. Like this gets really far.
Okay, good, because I don't have anything else.
Okay, okay. This sounds like a self-help book or an autobiography. So I hit the table while laughing and it stopped the recording. I don't know why that book's called A Practical Man, but I love it. Okay, my final tangent.
He's fiscally responsible.
So there was a book series that I didn't write down the name, but it was like in the late 90s, it was a YA horror series of like 12 books that around the time of New Hope. And they encountered just various, it was kind of like very like, I'm blanking on the word, just like the kind of stuff you would encounter in most science fiction horror stuff, kind of like Dark Space or Dead Space, the video game series, or I'm blanking, like Cthulhu, not like as big as Cthulhu, but like the smaller creatures you have in that author's name, who I'm totally forgetting, who wrote Cthulhu, Lovecraftian stuff, just like monsters that like eat you and I'm describing this terribly. Anyways, two of the main characters in this series were Tash Aranda and Mammon Hool. Their big plot of their series was they discovered the secret Project Starscream. And the series was solely authored by John Whitman, who's an American author. He worked on a lot of other novelizations based on media as well, including The Mummy Returns Junior Novelization, as in the second Mummy movie of with Brendan Fraser, Planet of the Apes books, books based off the television series 24, Digimon books, and various Star Wars radio dramas, which I can't believe were still a thing in the 90s. When this guy was writing?
People were desperate for Star Wars content.
And so this guy's Wikipedia article starts off saying, John Whitman is an American author and martial arts instructor. He is the founder of Krav Maga Alliance and a former president of the Krav Maga Worldwide. He is also, he was the first person in the world to be given a senior instructor degree from the Wingman Institute. You might be asking yourself, what is the Wingman Institute? It serves as a host facility for several Israeli national sports teams and a base for IDF fitness training. So I found myself going from Mammon Hool all the way through Project Starscream, through author John Whitman and his various works on The Mummy Returns Junior Novelization and Digimon books, through his side career as a what is effectively a advocate for Krav Maga, the martial arts thing, and then ended up on the fact that he trained at a facility that is for several Israeli national sports teams and a base for IDF.
All roads lead back to the Holy Land.
I'm not realizing that is a little less surprising because I'm now remembering Krav Maga was specifically developed adopted by the Israeli Defense Force, the Israeli military. So I guess it's a little less surprising, but it's still crazy. This guy who has two things on his Wikipedia article: Star Wars books, YA horror series. He wrote 12 of, but also,
oh boy,
trained in Israel in Krav Maga and is one of the world's leading guys on Krav Maga, seemingly. So that's my big tangent, way far away. But the best way to transition back to the pod is Meme Minute, but it's longer than a minute. It's a meme parsec, a meme astrosecond, a meme tangent, if you will. Rachel, what do you got this week? Like total, like videos. I have one image.
I got three images. Okay. I found two of them today.
give me your first one.
Okay, so first of all, I made this meme, and I don't think you ever reacted to it in our group chat.
Okay. Oh, you made that?
I made this. I didn't
realize it.
I made this in the Frozen Isle at Walmart.
It's very good. That's so good.
A basket on my arm, and I went, I gotta make this right now. So, context. I was at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was walking past, like, the care, the personal care stuff. I don't know. I had to get something. And there's an end cap, and it's got that Dr. Squatch soap stuff on it.
Yes.
And so I took a picture, and I sent it to our group chat, which consists of me, Cameron, and three others, two of which listen to our podcast. And the other one is married to one of our listeners. We love you. And so I said, I took a picture of it and said, Rebels and Robots episode idea. We buy the Dr. Squatch Star Wars soap and review them live. Caleb, our friend and loyal listener, says 10 out of 10 right after the highlight of the show for 2025, right after the Bird movie episodes. This is what happens when you're not in the group chat, Cameron. Yeah. We just make
I miss
up.
This. Yeah.
So I took the image of Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's captioned absolute cinema. And I just took it and recaptioned it as absolute podcast. So that's the meme, the black and white image with his hands up. And I was very proud of that one. I thought it was quite funny. Should I make that our new cover photo on?
Yes, absolutely. It's so funny. It's really a great image. It's really clever. This is not a meme per se. Obligatory, not a meme. But I have, so you mentioned Autobot Brainstorm earlier, who liked to tick off the Autobot Ethics Committee.
Purposely likes to create fine weapons
the
of war.
The caption under his picture on TF Wiki is just, if a job's worth doing, it's worth overdoing. What's your next meme?
This is a picture of someone going into an MRI machine, and the view is from like through the window where the MRI tech is there, and it says, Doc, how does it look? LOL, hold on, fam. And and the MRI tech is looking at the computer, but instead of the normal computer screen, it's Shin Godzilla.
He's just watching Godzilla.
Specifically the scene where Shin Godzilla is lit parts of Tokyo.
Uh-huh. Yep. So good. I don't really have as many memes these days, but I found this one by total accident, and it made me, I did not, this was especially good because I did not know it was going to be related to one of our subjects. I'm not going to spoil it yet. It's an image of an old man. I'm guessing this is the old man that is saying the quote that's on the text, but I don't know because I don't know what this guy looks like. But it says, all great literature is one of three stories. A man goes on a journey, a stranger comes to town, and Godzilla versus Mega Shark. Leo Tolstoy. that I did not anticipate the Godzilla element at the end. Who knew Tolstoy was such a Godzilla head?
Yeah, who knew? Who knew?
Anyways, what's your last meme?
Groceries expensive as hell this week. I just want you to see what's been purchased.
So you got bananas, some bacon, some eggs, some Monster Energy drinks, and some sort of like collector's edition of Godzilla Minus One.
It is a SM monster art of Godzilla Minus One, and let me I'll pull up the price for it.
Well, while she does that, it's okay. Go ahead.
It's $135.
Dang. Yeah, that's groceries be expensive as hell.
Only the necessities, am I right?
Only the necessities. So that's it. That's it. We really tried to pad time, and we're gonna have our shortest episode ever. I think
that's all we got.
But it's a fun, light episode. We have no idea what we're gonna do next. We'll think of something.
I can find more laws to talk about next week.
That was fun. I was thinking about this just earlier today. A big reason why Transformers became part of our Starformers night was that I didn't know much about it. I really only knew the movies, and I was interested to know more about it. And so it is a weirdly expansive mythology.
Do you
want to
know something really crazy about the IDW?
Sure.
So Ultra Magnus, who's in
Big Shoulders Boy.
Big Shoulders Boy. Existed at a point in the IDW universe, and at one point died. The current Ultra Magnus is a little guy named Minimus Ambus. He's like a quarter size of everyone else. He literally wears the old Ultra Magnus body as a suit of armor.
Oh,
it's and just wild. Like, I don't think his identity is found until the Lost Light arc. Literally, just going on the assumption that actually he never died. That Ultra Magnus never died to anyone else.
So
he's cosplaying like, as this dead
like,
man.
Like everyone else thought he was Ultra Magnus.
Yeah, because he's wearing.
And it was
his,
just someone.
He's
else
piloting
inside.
His
wow, that's wild. Like, did the reader know?
No.
And so it was revealed to the reader. See, because when you said it was guy wearing his skin, I imagined like he was still the same height. Like he was still short. He just had it like. Crumpled all around him. Like he was. I have this hilarious image of everyone thinks Ultra Magnus is still alive, but he's a quarter of the height and his skin is all like bunched up around him. Interesting. He's got like, he looks like he has a mustache.
He does. He's got a little mustache. Look at him.
Oh, that's actually a pretty good design. I expected something sillier. Can't see, my image of Transformers is just silly G1 shenanigans. But looking forward, I can't tell you what we're going to cover next week, but what? Oh, jeez. What am I about to see?
This title of a thread from TFW 2005 from 2015 just says, who the hell is Minimus Ambus?
So good. That's great.
I'm just so funny. You know...
Looking forward, I don't know what we're going to be covering on the next episode, but we'll between now and the next episode, there should be coming out. I am nearly done editing a highlight reel of 2024, this of season two of Rebels and Robots and etc. So you can be looking forward to that if you're interested. Kind of a clip show that kind of just is mostly just highlights from each of the segments, the things that we covered. With some fun things thrown in there in the middle.
We should have a wheeze moment where we're just like, get wheezered. Anyways, I'm sorry.
doing a funny backstory on, because we stopped. We've got time.
We're just laughing.
Funny backstory on that. So I had originally decided to not do a best of because
it's a lot of work.
Editing, I tried to get year one's best of a year ago out like in a timely manner. Cause it felt like I don't want to wait. Like I needed to do this now. It was like January. I didn't want to wait any longer. I wanted to get it done. And I was just kind of scrambling to put stuff together and I had all the transcripts, but like I had only decided halfway through last year, the first season to actually do the best of. So I only had notes from some of the episodes. I had meant to go back and re-listen to the episodes, the older episodes, and I didn't do that, so I didn't have all my stuff ready to go, and so it was just so much work. I decided, okay, I'm not doing it this year. Well, for some reason, within the last couple of weeks, I just decided, oh, here's what I can do. I can make it super easy. I can just do one clip from each episode, and that will be super fast and easy to do. And then once I had it in my mind, I could do. I'd be like, well, You know, yes, when it's January, it feels like, oh, the start of the year is going to, like, if you wait too long, the start of the year is over, and it's going to be weird to release a best of the previous year. But I thought about it, like, a year from now, February still feels like the beginning of the year. And I would really love to have a best of season two so I can mm-hmm. keep doing them. Because I feel prepared to do season three mm-hmm. by, like, as episodes come out, taking notes as I re-listen to episodes. All that to say, I convinced myself I had an easier method of doing it. And it's taking me like 10 times as long as the first one because I've worked on it over the course of the last couple of weeks. So it's actually much longer and more detailed than the first one's like twice as long. But I think it's a nice little retrospective back. And it's been a lot of fun to edit. So I've actually really enjoyed it because I've given myself multiple days and time periods to work on it rather than just trying to get it all done in one evening like mm-hmm. I did the first year. Mm-hmm. So Rachel has clearly found something or is doing, I don't know what she's doing.
Sorry, I was on our Twitter. Okay. I was trying to change our cover photo, and it's not. I have to edit it.
Oh, okay.
It's too thin.
Okay,
I gotta change it from probably the best one we've ever had.
That's not very.
that is very cash money.
That is very cash, and it's Godzilla with the Rebels and Robots helmet on. Well, thank you for joining us this week, listeners. Just a fun, light episode. Thank you, as always, to Caleb Jacoby for our excellent intro and outro music. Love listening to it every week. Props to Rachel for our excellent artwork and putting memes
supplier of memes.
Yeah. And also the Twitter account at Rebels and Robots Pod.
Props to Cameron for doing our Facebook and our Instagram, even though he doesn't respond to what I send him. and props for putting notifications together the best
stuff. Give us something to read on the pod. Oh, also, of course, thank you to Athena for the edit.
Thank you.
She has got airplane ears right now. I don't know what she's doing. She looks like she's on high alert. She knows that the end is coming. She's got to be ready to do the edit real quick. Tweet us. I just combined tweet or DM us into tweet DM us.
DM us.
Memes or opinions. Leave a review if you like. It'd be really great. Caleb and Megan, I know you're listening. Well, actually, I don't know if Megan's listening anymore.
Your review can't be about how we talk about Athena too much. Just throwing that out
friend
there.
Friend of the pod. That was his review to us in person.
Friend of the pod.
Caleb, I know you're listening. Leave a review on Apple Podcast. We only have two. It's me and a friend who did it like the very earliest.
Caleb, I'm desperate to hear your thoughts about law. Well, not in general.
Cybertronian law. This is Cam and Rachel signing off saying, if a pod's worth casting, it's worth overcasting.
Oh. Look at us, done before 7 o'clock.
Craziness.
Who are we, Cameron?